Good day, my friends, and welcome to the Craig Shapiro Tennis Podcast. Today's show is brought to you by Diadora, the brand made legendary by Bjorn Borg, currently worn by world number 41, Jan-Lennard Struff, and the former world number 18, Martina Trevisan. See them at Diadora.com. Use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollywoodSports.com for 15% off of all Diadora performance tennis shoes. ScopeSports.io is the official fan club platform of the podcast. With Scope Fan Clubs, you can access premium behind-the-scenes content and chat with players that include the world number 57, who just won today in Rome, Flavio Cabali, and the world number 26, Talon Griekspoor. You can put yourself in play for exclusive giveaways. These guys are on the move. See them at ScopeSports.io to see what they are all about. We have a very special show for you today as we are on the ground in Rome for the Italian Open. Today's guest was born in Bulgaria. He has been ranked as high as 3 in the world and is the current world number 10. He is known as one of the nicest guys on tour and is equipped with amongst the most aesthetically pleasing games the world has ever known. Grigor Dimitrov is today's guest.
I'm not going to disclose the location, but do you always stay here?
Actually, no. This is the first year since the tournament that put us out here. Usually, I'm not far from here, like half a mile away.
Where you normally stay?
Yeah, where I normally stay.
Now, did you ever stay at the Cavalieri Hilton?
Yes, my favorite.
That was your favorite? Because there's courts there.
They have a court there, but it's just closer to side. And I don't know, I like the vibe there. I used to go there, I've been here for many years now.
Well, we've played here like since 17
way
years.
Way too many. I think I've probably played here. So I would say probably over 10 years easily.
Gentlemen, you hear world number 10.
Correct.
You've been as high as 3. One of the most respected and I think beautiful players that the game has seen, really. Grigor Dimitrov, we're in Rome. And you go Friday. You play Nishioka.
Yeah.
Who did Nishioka beat?
He beat Offner today.
Did you see the level or no?
I didn't. I was practicing at the time.
You practiced with Novak.
I practiced with Novak actually yesterday. We practiced with Casper Ruud today. So I've been having some tough guys to practice with.
But you and Novak practice on site. Did you practice off-site today?
No, on-site.
On-site. Yeah. Do you always practice on-site?
Well, we're depending, I think, on the day. Yes, we want to practice more on-site.
Because we saw guys at the Canottiere Roma the other day.
Yeah, there's a bunch of clubs we can go.
So listen, as you know, we do a five-set format. The first set's the off-the-court report. Did you come from Monte Carlo? Is that where you live?
I live in Monte Carlo, yes, for the past maybe 10, 12 years now.
I thought you lived in California for some reason.
For quite some time. I grew up in California. I was 14 when I first went there, up in Santa Barbara. So that was fun.
Grew up in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, like a little bit. Yeah, I was traveling a lot early on my my years. And I was with my dad. So it was, that was the time where we went to California for the first time. So that was a lot of fun for me. And then after that, I spent more or less 6-7 years in California. So,
when you're not on tour,
yeah,
Monte Carlo.
But yeah, right now when I'm not on tour, I'm fully
practice there.
Practice there, live there, practice there, enjoying there, everything.
Do you have a U.S. base?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Shut it down.
Shut it completely down. But I have a lot of friends all over. I think America, and it's always. I mean, I love being in America also, so it feels like a second nature to me.
We're going to talk about, you're like a real, you've like lived all over the world.
Yeah.
You're like a real statesman, kind of.
Pretty much.
And do you even have a home in Bulgaria?
Well, my parents.
Parents.
Yeah, my parents does. They live there. I mean, I've spent somehow, you know, not too many years in Bulgaria. I think I left when I was 14 years old, so I think the bigger part of my life so far has been outside of Bulgaria.
Outside?
Yeah, completely outside.
Let's move into the second set. This is the on-the-court report. Miami was, what was that like for you?
It was an experience, to be honest, because Miami's been the tournament that I've always suffered the most. I felt like I was never able to find my game out there, and I think this year was the first time where I stepped into a different level out there. I think that was the part where I really felt like I was doing a progress. I think with every match, and I had amazing wins back to back. So overall, was a tournament where I could really understand and see how things were going for me, and I was very honestly, I was very humbled after that event, because it meant more than I can actually imagine. And of course, I would have loved to get that one through the final, but I think in the end was meant to happen.
Well, you beat Carlitos. How important is that to, like, almost like your year, your last three? Like, what's that like?
Yeah, I think not just that match. I think every match that I played out there, it meant a lot to me from so many different levels, from such a different perspective. For me, that was a tournament where I had to deliver for myself, and I think this is something that it's never easy to do, especially when you play Masters 1000 events, and the conditions that can be so tricky out there with the wind and the courts and the balls, everything that is playing around. So it's, for me personally, it's amazing how I can how I turn things around, and I think this is what I'm the most, I think, proud with.
Why did you turn it around? What happened down there that it clicked? Can you explain it?
I don't know. I think I found the right settings, the way I'm preparing for the match, the way I'm hitting the ball. I think the opponents that I was playing, I was just managing to do, you know, enough damage on it from every aspect. And of course, also my movement was played a big role for me, which every time I can move well, it's really, really, really sets me up for a good setup. Yeah.
Anytime you can move well, is you hit your backhand better?
Yeah, overall, like, of course, I think backhand is always a shot where you feel like, okay, if this thing works, it gives you even extra confidence. But it's not just that. I think it's just the way that I dealt with everything that was thrown at me. That's it. The opponent, especially the opponents, the way they were playing. Yeah.
When you played Carlitos, it felt like I looked like a video game to me. Yeah. I didn't even recognize that.
It felt like one.
Just the. It felt like I never seen you in such a zone, really.
You know, it happens. I think it happens throughout the year. We don't get that many times that you're in the zone to that extent. And I think once you're on it, you feel like everything is on rails. Like everything goes the way you want. And I cherish these moments. You know, they're so rare, and it's also very difficult to constantly tap into that. I think when they come, you really got to make the most out of it.
Are you better now than you were when you were 25? Are you a better tennis player now? Are you a better athlete now?
I like to think so. Yeah. I think.
How can that be? Because I think so too, without knowing you. But like,
I think maturity. I think overall, and not just like maturity on the court, I think off the court. I mean, it's an inevitable part, you know, in a way, the older you get, the more you learn. Right? So I think for me was, I think I've gone through so many different stages in my career that I think I understood the assignment very differently than what I actually thought I needed. So in the end, things came to me a bit different. And yeah, I don't look at also at age the same way anymore, I think.
Is it like, do you feel like it's like evolution in a way too? Like that athletes are getting better, like 30s is the new 20s?
Well, it depends on you. I always say that. I think through any athlete, whoever's, you know, around there, I really feel like the part that I think it comes a point where we'll need to make a conscious choice. And I think you need to make sure that the conscious choice stays within you and how you look after your body. I think it's so important for us.
What are your conversations with Novak like? Do you guys talk to each other when you're on the court? When you're like, you'd say like, oh man, you know, I'm so tired. I can't stay with these guys. You know, how do you feel? Like, do you guys just be like, oh, I feel great?
No, I think on that sense, honesty is in session every single time. I mean, you also have to admit it that you cannot always be at your best, and of course the younger guys tend to at times, you know, take over, which is normal, but in the same time, you know, experience can cost a lot.
How are you feeling about these back-to-back-to-back long tournaments now to go 14 days, 14 days, 14 days?
Yeah, that's a rough go, I think. That's a rough go for everybody.
Is everybody upset?
Yeah, I think so.
Upset?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a good thing.
You know, some tournaments, I believe they have to be, but only some. But when it's like this, especially on a clay court, it's very difficult.
It's too much.
It's just too much.
It's too much.
It's also the amount of hours you need to not only forget about the playing part, actually the competing part for a second, but the part where you need to keep your body up to speed, I think is where it costs more.
Do you watch pro tennis? Are you a guy that watches it? So do you feel like the tournaments are losing steam? Like you...
I think it really depends. I still believe that our sport can be broadcasted very differently. I still believe our sport can be shown from a very different perspective, honestly. Like, I think that we can be better promoted.
I think as part of the media, I agree, but what do you mean?
We're, I would say, one of the only, if not the only sport that play from basically from 1st of January to November. I mean, there's no other sport that I know that has first a schedule like ours. Second, the amount of traveling that we do, we play on so many different continents and all this. I just think that we can be more, I don't want to say more legit because it's a strong word, but we, as I said, they can show the better part of us even more, because I think also what fans want to see is the other parts of us. And I think this is the, in a way, the moment where we are not seeing that, where we're just seeing as what we do, you know.
But so then why didn't we see you and the more prominent players in Breakpoint?
Yeah, that was a conscious choice for me, because I think first there's very limited access to all the tournaments for the people to see all that, and I think while you're competing, a lot of the players don't want to show things from the inside, which I totally understand. You need to find, it's a fine balance. I think it's a fine balance. It's a very thin line on that end.
But conversely, like, those stories were good. No.
I guess. I mean, I honestly, I saw just briefly, like...
Okay.
And I was, you know, I was not too, like, eager to see it. I just kind of wanted to see how everything was presented. But all I'm trying to say is, like, especially for the tennis part, we could do better, I think, more as an entity on that end.
What are the conversations like in the players' lounge about this Saudi situation?
Everyone, believe it or not, everybody has been very quiet about it.
Quiet.
Yeah, this is actually, it surprises me a little bit.
Are you guys getting approached by them to say, listen, we're going to give you $500 million?
Not personally.
Not personally.
None of that stuff, I think. I think all the officials
Is that going to happen? Will that happen? You guys are all going to get big offers to jump?
Yeah, but also, what does that really mean?
Like, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Even if we get big offers, what does that really mean? Like, it's basically a choice between the tours you want to play, which is, I don't know. I think tennis is hard as is already. And, you know, if you start adding up new things and all that.
Do you have any feel for what's going to happen?
I have my personal feel, but that's something that I understand. People want to see changes from a very different perspective in our sport. I, for one, think that you know, there will be some changes. I just hope they're not going to be that big.
You think that Bercy will go away and they'll make the 1,000 the top of the year in Riyadh?
Oh, honest, that part I have no idea.
I highly
doubt that.
You doubt it.
But could it be adding another tournament? Possibly.
You've been a Nike player for so long. What's it like to be wearing the crocodile?
Yeah. Honestly, like it was a very interesting change, very interesting time for me, and I think it was a great time for me to switch. I mean, I've always been very grateful the way Nike did everything for me over the course of my career. Really, I'm more than thankful for that. However, you know, with Lacoste was the right time for me, the right move. Really, truly amazing people in the team, which also makes it very, very special to me. I like to work with people that I can relate to, and I like to work with people that want to innovate, to create. This is very important.
Do you feel good in the clothes?
Yeah, I mean, it's been almost over a year now. So it's, you know, of course it takes time to adjust with certain things, but I think we're all working into the right direction, and hopefully we can come up with more things.
Everybody wants to know, you're still on the Vapor 9 though. That's it. What's the story behind that?
Not really a story. I've been playing, I think, all my life.
How do you get them now?
I just have some.
Really?
Yeah.
How many pairs do you have?
I cannot tell you that. I wish I could, but I cannot. I have
100.
For now, I just have. I'm not gonna. I'm not
you
gonna
can't even
it.
Talk
I'm
about.
I'm not gonna talk about.
You
it.
Can't talk about it.
It's a very sore. It's a very sore topic to me.
Really?
Yeah. But I, you know, I feel like. There's going to be a change. Change is coming.
By the way, everyone's like, what's the story with those Vapor 9s? How does he get them? Have them?
No, but it's... One day, maybe I'll speak more about it. I think it's just not the time. But I think the best part about it is, like, I would say good things are coming. Good change is coming. I'm working off the, you know...
To get into a... Talking about getting into a Lacoste shoe.
Of course. That's
okay.
The main goal.
Got it.
That's the main goal. But yeah, there's always things that are lurking around on that end with the shoes, because it's a very, very peculiar moment.
Let's move into the third set. This is the portion of our show where we talk about your career. Your father was a tennis pro. How did you become such a, like, how did you get these strokes? How did it happen like that?
Oh my God, no one
plays like you, man.
You know, I think with the year, it's funny that now I'm realizing, when I hear, like, oh, your game is a bit different, and I'm starting to understand this, I think, more to understand this thing more now than I have ever have, because I can see at the times where it really rattles players and makes them and puts them in a very uncomfortable situations.
The way you play,
yeah,
you see it,
yeah. Yeah.
That they can't believe you can play like that.
It's not about the belief, it's just putting them in a very uncomfortable spot. I think, and when you put somebody in an uncomfortable spot on the court, it's very difficult to play tennis. Of course, it cannot always happen, but when it does, it creates a very, you know, a turbulence in their game, which, lucky for me, it puts me in a very good position to do so. And
when you say turbulence, you mean like they feel they're out of time, that you can't...
It's not only so much about the time. I think they just... they take the wrong decision. They're a bit unaware of the next step might be, or they think I might play there, but I'm playing here. So it's always like keep them basically on their toes and keep them guessing. And I think this is also where you win time on the court.
When you're playing well, like what's it like? Like do you have a song in your mind, or do you just like what are you thinking about?
No, I think when you play well, when you're in that flow. You're just so there in that particular moment that you feel like time has stopped, and that's about it. There's nothing else. You play by instinct almost, and then it just things happen.
Can you explain your path? You went to Spain. Do I have that right? Like,
yeah. So yeah. Gonna try to sum it all up. I think I started obviously with my dad. He taught me how to play tennis
in Bulgaria.
In Bulgaria,
And what's that like? Where you, I mean, what's it like to like grow up in Bulgaria?
Not easy.
Not easy.
Not easy. Not easy. I grew up on in a very small tennis club south of in a province of Bulgaria in the south. And winters we had to play in school halls where me and my dad every morning had to put a scotch tape for lines.
Come on.
Yeah, windows were broken. It was -10 degrees. Was freezing. It was in a school hall where they play. Like handball, so yeah, I had to get up every morning, and we used to pull up a net that we had two metal poles, and yeah, this is basically how my day was beginning.
And that's how you got good? You got pretty good like that?
You know, it's everything. It's tenacity. I always say it's a lot of things altogether. If there's a will, there's a way. I think. But for me, it was never anything else. You know, my mom is a former volleyball player. My dad was a tennis coach. So I come from naturally from a very athletic family.
Very athletic family.
Yeah. But even till nowadays, they're very active. So for us, you know, it's sport is life. And I owe everything to those experiences, to be completely honest with you. Even with my dad and with my mom, they've taught me so much on a... Well, no, hard work. That's it. There's no
hard work.
There's no shortcuts.
Hard work.
There's zero shortcuts.
Did you try to copy anybody's strokes?
No, because at the time we didn't have the tennis channel or anything like that. And back in the day, so we only had a couple of big. I think some of the slams, and that's about it.
Your strokes are just your strokes?
No, I think the. Well, my dad taught me how to play, so that was, I think, one of the first things that he always taught me is, like, actually my slice. So so for me, it was my natural movement to hit any shots. And even for the one hand, I never hit a backhand with two hands. So
always one hand and backhand.
Correct. And I think that was also the time where me and my dad always worked on that. And clearly after that, when I got a little bit more on tour, I could see and realize that my game was similar, obviously, to Roger. So, of course, after that, I watched a lot of his tennis at the time. Of course, I even remember Pete playing back in the days. I was a kid watching him. You know, I didn't have that many players to look up to overall with one hand as well. Of course, I think it's actually Quertin. I've seen like quite a few other guys. So, yeah, I think there came a point where I had to like start going to other places, and then this is where I went to California, and then went to Spain, went to Paris.
Martoglu.
Yeah, I was in Martoglu Academy for a little bit, and I was in Sanchez Casal before that. Then I went to Sweden for a year.
Wow.
Back to California for 6-7 years, and yeah.
And when you were a junior, like, and were you bankrolled by like a deal you did with IMG, or was it no, or the Bulgarian Federation?
No. Bulgarian Federation never.
No,
never stepped into the picture, of course.
So you hustled.
Well, my parents and my dad did. Actually, my first ticket to go out of the country was bought from my two grandfather's pension.
Come on.
Yeah, so that was something that was. You know, pretty amazing. I still remember that moment.
Your grandparents.
Yeah, my grandparents. They had to get from their pension in order for me to get that.
Come on, man.
Yeah. And then, but honestly, also along the way, I've met so many amazing people, and I'm so grateful to it, even to all the academies I was at. And of course, they knew what my situation was, and they really helped me. They really helped me financially, especially with coaches, accommodation. Of course, after that, I think at 14, I remember I had my first contract. So then things were slowly starting to get better. My dad was scraping around, but he was hustling.
Was there ever a moment where you you had a win, or you knew like, oh, I can be really, really good. Like I can be pro, or did you know that?
No, I knew that very early in my life.
You knew that early?
Yeah, it was never like anything else for me. Plus... I think when I was at school one day, and I think it was like a break or something we had, and I don't know, I see everyone was doing their thing, and I'm like, nah, just gonna make it. That's just given. There's no other Nothing else could have stopped me on that end. And
you were watching everyone do their schoolwork, and we're like,
yeah, no, I was like, no, this is not gonna cut it for me. And I think also there was a time when I won this tournament in France. I was 11 years old, and I came back home. I had the trophy on the table, and I was looking at it, and my parents came home, and I'm like, guys, just so you know, for the rest of my life, this is what I'm gonna be doing. And you know, 21 years later, I'm still doing the same thing. So it's been quite the journey. It's been quite the journey.
Let's move into the fourth set. This is the 10-ball scramble. I say it, we go as fast.
Sure.
Your favorite tournament?
Wimbledon.
Your favorite court?
Center court, Wimbledon.
aside from center court, Wimbledon, is there any court where you just like love to put on the show, where you feel great?
Yeah, honestly, like a lot of the big courts are something that have something with me. I think the Australian Open has been a special one to me as well.
You're a big court player.
Big court player.
Always.
Has to be.
What is the most cavalier thing you ever did with prize money right out of the office? Like, what's the wildest thing you ever did?
Well, that's a good question. Well, that's a very good question. I've been asked that. I'll take a bunch of cash and go blow it. I don't know. I think bought a watch after I won the junior Wimbledon. I went in and bought myself a watch.
After you won the junior Wimbledon?
Yeah, because we had bonuses also, like with our contract. So.
So you got a bonus.
I got a bonus like for the outfits I was wearing, and I got a watch.
Your favorite racket?
Clearly Wilson. It's been all my life.
The same racket?
Same racket since I'm 17, yeah.
You messed with your string patterns. Explain that.
I always look for the edge. That's it. And I've always been very risky when it comes to these things, because I always know I can adjust to and adapt to anything that comes in my hand. But I'm extremely picky, so I wouldn't just play with whatever I think.
So hang on a second. What racket's your racket?
It's two Wilson. Just my bedding is different. On it,
the what?
The bedding, the strings. The bedding.
The strings. Yeah, yeah. What's your strings?
18-18.
That's different.
Yeah.
I know. How long have you been 18-18?
For quite some time now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
18-18?
Yeah. Everyone sees it now, so even if I lie, I will not.
18-18?
Yeah.
And what string?
I play with Natural Gut and Luxilon.
Natural Gut in the crosses.
Main Gut, Cross, Luxilon.
Main's Gut, Cross, and Lux. And yeah. What's your tension?
Oh, it varies.
You move it around?
Yeah.
Where are you right now here in Rome?
I think here I'm at the 25, 24.
And do you pre-stretch or anything?
10% pre-stretch.
10% pre-stretch on the gut?
On the gut only.
You can't pre-stretch the Lux.
I mean, you can pull it, but it's not gonna.
And what about your grip?
My grip is over 5, so it's custom made, so it's not. I don't have exact number, but it's over 5.
What size is 4? Is that 4 5/8?
No, it's 5. It's custom, so it's like a, I don't know. It's like a 5 point something. I have a big hand.
Really?
Yeah, pretty big hands.
Oh damn!
Yeah.
5? Does everyone freak out when they just, no one see? I never knew that it existed.
No, it's just when it's custom, you know, you don't care so much about the size, to be honest.
Your favorite player growing up?
Growing up, yeah, but definitely Roger.
Now, is there anyone you love to watch play?
I enjoy a lot of, yeah, I love watching Alcaraz, to be honest. Sort of the younger generation. I have to give them that.
Yeah. Sure. What's it feel like to? I wanted to ask you earlier, but I know we have some time constraints. Yeah. What does it feel like to play him?
Honestly, it's fun for me in a sense that I've played against so many different players in different generations that seeing the way his ball comes at you, it's just different. Honestly, it's just
different. Yeah, different quality.
Different quality of a ball, and it's nice to see it. I'm enjoying of course, not so much fun when you play, but like I enjoy watching that. Clearly, a lot of the other players are having they're amazing ball strikers. Actually, I think tremendous ball strikers. But you know, with Alcaraz, you can see the diversity, and I like that a lot.
Big entourage or lean and mean?
No, short. Keep it simple.
Lean.
Yeah.
Lean and mean.
Yeah.
How many do you travel with?
Just two people.
Two.
Yeah.
But you never have 15 in the box.
Oh, no, I have a lot of, if my friends and stuff are coming, yeah, people can go in the box, not a problem. But like where I'm like traveling and I have my physio and I have my fitness coach my tennis coach, my dad, that's about it.
What's your opinion of box etiquette? How should people behave in the box?
Honestly, I'm very easy with that stuff. I think just be yourself. Just be yourself. Enjoy these moments. They're
you don't so like precious. If you lose a match, you don't go back and be like, listen, you're in the box. You look nervous. You're making me nervous.
No,
you
can't. I cannot. This is not me.
You don't it do
doesn't
that.
Work that.
Doesn't
way.
Work that yeah, way. No. Best advice you ever got in tennis?
Best advice I've ever gotten in tennis. I feel like I'm giving a lot of advices lately, but I'm not sure what have I gotten lately. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Who's bigger in Bulgaria, you or Stoichkov?
Actually, I don't know right now. Unfortunately, I don't spend much time there.
Yeah.
He's pretty big. He's pretty amazing, I think, overall in Bulgaria. But you know what? I like my chances.
Yeah? Yes. You're big. And if you ever do go there, do you need full security? Do they have parades for you?
Like, this is the one thing that I never liked, because I'm Bulgarian, you know, and I want them to see me as one as well. I mean, it just happened for me to be good at what I do. That's it. No difference. Best feta cheese? Yeah, we have amazing cheese in Bulgaria.
But is Bulgarian better than Greek?
I prefer more the Bulgarian.
What's the difference?
I think feta is a little bit more like greasy, if I believe correct. There's different fetas, actually. It really depends how you make it. But in Bulgaria, we have our natural one. I really like it.
Let's move into the fifth and final set. This is the king of the court. If you can make a change in the sport with just a swing of the racket with no aggravation.
Easy.
What would it be?
Just have one tennis ball for every tournament.
One ball?
Just one type of ball and everyone just gets on with it.
And the ball's a problem, changing balls.
Well, it's I think one of the biggest things we're dealing with nowadays.
Explain that. I understand it, but people don't understand that.
Well, you play 2-3 weeks, for example.
How's this ball here, by the way?
It's heavy.
It's too heavy.
Yeah, it's just heavy. Sometimes they fly.
Yeah, he's making a face and they fly.
It's just difficult for the body, for the shoulder. I think that's why you need to work extra.
And that ball fluffs up fast. No.
No, it doesn't fluff up fast.
Not this one.
It stays heavy. You know, it's like, I can explain it. It's like, you're hitting, but sometimes the ball plays you instead of you playing the ball.
That's the Dunlop ATP extra duty.
I don't even know. It's Dunlop, but we don't even know like the actual. We just don't really see the, you know.
You don't even see what it is. But the balls are different, and it's a problem.
I mean, you can see the can. You can see the can of that part, but it's just how it is. You know, in the end of the day, for us, it's. We still have to do what we have to do and play with whatever we have across. But if there's something I can change, that'll be it.
Amazing. Yeah. Hey, listen, this was a pleasure. Really grateful for you to come on the show. Have a great week in Rome. How are you feeling? You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Yeah?
It's time.
Are we going to see you for many more years? Or are you?
I'm planning on to play.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, if my body holds up well, I always say, you know, the body is, I think, a great barometer of anything. And of course, your mind. If you're still there, if you're engaged, if you're willing to put in the work, the hard yards, you'll be fine.
Grigor Dimitrov's enjoying it.
Thank you.
My man, this was a pleasure. You are released. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Beautiful.
Huge thank you to Grigor Dimitrov, and thank you to Diodora. Use my code APPROVED in all caps at HollyburnSports.com for 15% off of all Diodora performance tennis shoes. ScopeSports.io is the official fan club platform of the podcast. See them at ScopeSports.io. Max Loeb edited the show. Our music is by Brian Senti. We'll be back next time with more of the most interesting voices in the sport. Until then, I'm Craig Shapiro, and you are released.